Parshas Vayechi discusses the deaths of Yaakov and Yosef, kind of the end of the whole story in Sefer Bereishis. So we're told that when Yaakov died, it says, "Vayesav raglav el amita, v'yigva v'yosef el amav." Yaakov died. Then it says, "Vayitzav Yosef as avadav as harofim." Yosef commanded his servants, his subjects. He was the ruler of Egypt. He told his servants, the rofim, the doctors, the physicians, lachnot as aviv, to embalm his father. Vayachin to harofim as Yisrael. So the doctors went ahead and did that. They embalmed Yaakov in preparation for the burial. Then it says, "Vayimlu lo arboim yom." So then 40 days elapsed. Kichen yimlu yimeachanutim. The process took 40 days. Then they had some kind of mourning period, another 70 days. And then it says that he told them that they're going to go up to Eretz Yisrael. They went to Eretz Yisrael and they buried Yaakov in the Maris Machpelah, of course, in Eretz Canaan. Later it says Yosef died. It says the last pasuk in the Pasha, the last pasuk in Chumash Bereishis. It says Vayamas Yosef and Me'avo Esher Shanim. Yosef himself died at 110 years old. Vayachin Tuos of Isin Bar Mitzrayim. It doesn't say who gave the instructions. Yosef was dead, but Yosef's body was treated the same way. Yosef himself was embalmed. Vayachin Tu, he was embalmed just like he had earlier instructed his father Yaakov. Now we know from museums, we know the Egyptians were famous for their mummies, King Tut and these other ones that had these elaborate processes where they took out some of the organs and then they chemically treated the body and then they wrapped up the mummy today. The iconic image we have is with all the white tape around it. But whatever it is, chanata, embalming, is a process by which the body is, some of the organs are removed, at least that's the way they do it today. And then the body is treated chemically to preserve it in certain ways, and then it's wrapped up. And that is what happened to Yaakov and Yosef after they died. And with Yaakov, it was specifically under the instructions of Yosef that that's what they did. This is obviously not something that we do today. If you ask the Chevra Kedisha, what are the options? Can you embalm the mace? They will look at you probably aghast. They'll be appalled at such an idea. It's not Jewish. It's not what we do to our dead, they say. Yet, Yaakov and Yosef did this. They had this done to them after death.
This is not done. Maybe it's just started with Moshe. This is before Moshe.
It's before Moshe. Yeah, so we'll discuss that. We'll discuss how things might have changed. Or
they took some organs out too from...
I don't know for sure if they did that. That's how they do it today, I know. I don't know if they did that in the time of Yaakov. I don't know. I don't know. So this basic point is raised first by the Rashba. The Rashba has a very important, very famous tshuva. The Rashba, writing in the 13th century, basically, 13th or early 14th century, the Rashba had a tshuva. He was asked a very interesting question. The case was, someone had died, a Jewish man had died. He wanted to be buried in a family cemetery where other members of his family were. The problem was that it was far away. It couldn't be done immediately. The case was he wanted to go to Kfuras Avosa, where his ancestors were. They couldn't, apparently had it been done immediately and properly, it could have been done on the spot, but they had to temporarily, they couldn't do it for whatever reason, the roads weren't good, they couldn't do it on that day, they had to temporarily bury him somewhere else, and they wanted to know, can they take him out and move him to the other cemetery? And to do that, now the body had started to decay, it wouldn't be practical to carry it, the body would have continued to decay, and it would have, the odor would have been terrible. So what they wanted to do was basically take Sid, pour it on the body, which would eat away, which would destroy all the soft tissue, the flesh, that would be left with the skeleton, the bones, I suppose. Then it would be much easier, much cleaner and easier to carry that to the family cemetery and bury the bones there. Essentially, chemical cremation. Unlike cremation, the skeleton would be left intact, but they wanted to basically chemically burn away all the soft tissue, which would make transportation of the body much easier. So they asked the Rashba, is that okay? And the Rashba said, yes, it's fine, no problem. The Rashba said that it's all for the cover of the mace. You're doing this for a noble reason. You want to comply with his own wishes. and you want to do it for his honor, it's a Jewish value to be buried with your family, those are all good things. He says, and in general, the rule is, he says, that in such a case, certainly where you're doing it for a good reason and to comply with his own wishes, there's no issue. There are two issues that don't apply. He says, Bizayon Hames and Zara Hames. Bizayon, humiliation, it's a disgrace for the body to not be buried, to be treated certain ways, and it's a question of Zara Hames. The Gemara talks about whether a dead person feels tsar when his body is defiled or dissected, but here he says, no, in general, the mace has no tsar, he said, the ikar is the mace has no tsar, and we don't worry about disrespect, Adrabba, you're doing it for the cover of the mace, so the Rashba says, this is no problem, and he specifically references, he very tersely, but he alludes to Yaakov, he says that that's what the bombers did, the bombers also do things to the body that are not strictly preserving it for kfura. They take out the organs or whatever it is, he says. That's what they do too. They do things that also which don't involve simple burial. And you see, this is apparently fine. So the Rashba says his case is fine. And the Raman, Shulchan Aruch, passing like this. The Raman Yardayan in the Hilchos Kfura says you were allowed to put Sid on the body. Sid, again, is lye, some kind of caustic chemical agent. You're allowed to put Sid on the body to eat it away. If the goal is, again, to do this, to be able to transport it properly to the appropriate cemetery. Now, another variation of this question that comes up in the poskim, this is discussed in the Shvos Yaakov and others, there were cases where there were times of disease, plague, different kinds of disease, and the governments were very worried about if the person might be infectious. So the government apparently had a rule, had a law, that if you want to bury the dead person locally in an inhabited area, they required you to first use this type of sid to burn away all of tissue because they were worried about, they didn't really understand about microbes, but they were worried about the possibility of disease transmission. So you had a choice. You can either take the mace to a faraway place, like in the forest somewhere where there's no human habitation and bury him normally, or you could bury him in a proper cemetery, but then you had to use this kind of lye to burn away the tissue. And the question was, which is better? So again, the Shvos Yaakov invokes this Rashba, that the Rashba paskind, that the lahalacha, if you're doing it for a good reason, that in order to give the mace the most honorable funeral possible, then it's fine. And here also, you're doing it basically in order to preserve the ability to give him an honorable burial, so that's fine. And he has an analysis of the Rashba, but he also comes out that is basically okay. Now, there's a Radvaz a little bit earlier, back in the 16th century, there's a Tshuva in the Radvaz. He was also discussing a similar question about this Rashba. Are you allowed to use Sid in order to burn away the tissue in order to allow for more practical burial? And he analyzes the Rashba. He points out that in the Talmud there are actually contradictory passages about whether the mace can feel pain or not. On the one hand, the Talmud tells us that Kosha Rima Lemeis Kimachat Basar Achai, that the pain of the decomposition is as painful for the dead as a needle would be to the living, as surgery, to the living. On the other hand, they say there are other Gemaras that indicate the mace feels no pain, and once he's dead, there's no problem at all. So the Radvaz goes through this, and he explains that the Rashba felt that the Ikar Lahalacha is that in general the mace feels no pain. In general, once he's dead, that's it. There's no more sensation, like we know today. Maybe he says the decomposition is a special thing. It's a special onesh from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to atone for someone's sins. But normally, other types of pain, the mace does not feel. He explains the Rashba's rayas from the Parsha. It says that Yosef and Yaakov did these things, these things were done to them after they died, which clearly indicates that it's not a problem, that it's in perfect accordance with the Jewish tradition. And therefore, Meikra Din, it is Mutter. Now, the Radvaz brings something else fascinating. He says, on the contrary, there is, he says, an idea. There was a certain chassid, he says, a certain person who had the idea. He dafka wanted, he wasn't going anywhere, but he dafka wanted to have lye poured on his body after he died, because there's a tradition, brought by the poskim also, that the onesh of Gehenna, that the mace feels pain until the decomposition of the body is completed. That until then, he feels a certain amount of pain, Gehenna or whatever it is. So the tzaddik, in order to minimize that pain, he wanted the decomposition to be sped up as much as possible, so he asked that lye be put on the body. So the Radvaz says, he does, even though it's mutter, according to this Rashba, it's mutter, he doesn't really approve of this, he says, because he says, what are you trying to do? Outsmart HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants the mace to have certain pain to atone for his sins. We don't know how exactly how God's justice works, But that's what Hashem wants. A normal mace undergoes a certain amount of pain. So what are you trying to do? He says, you're going to try to outsmart God. He says, Hashem will find a different way to punish you if you need to be punished. He says, and on the contrary, if a person's a tzaddik, that he doesn't need punishment, that even if you don't use lie, Hashem will take care of speeding up the process to minimize the pain. So incidentally, unlike many stories they tell today about tzaddikim who were somehow, they opened them up later and they found the body was still intact, this Radbaz is going with the opposite approach. As a tzaddik, Hashem will dafka, make the body decompose as quickly as possible, because that's really in the best interest of the mace, to have the decomposition hastened so the Gehenna with any onus she has will be finished. Maybe there are different kinds of tzaddikim, different levels, I don't know. But in any event, the Radbaz says, again, echoing this Rashba, the Radbaz says, the Meikra Din, it is mutter to put lie. You shouldn't go out of your way to do it just because of these ideas of Kapari, says, because that's Hashem's business. Just let Hashem treat the mace as he wants. But if you're doing it for a concrete and practical need, like the desire to bury the mace in an appropriate and honorable, the best way possible, then it is fine. And this is pretty much this is the halacha. This is, again, this is the Shulchan Aruch Paskins. This is the Rama Paskins. This is something that is mutter. Now, it's very interesting. This takes us to the topic of cremation in general, burial and cremation. It's a fascinating thing for the history of halacha. We know that today the poskim are adamantly opposed to cremation. Chabad Kaddish will tell you that, but it's not just their thing. In the 19th century, there was an explosion of literature on this topic. Explosion of literature on the topic of cremation, and the poskim were vehemently opposed, virtually to a man. Virtually every single one were absolutely appalled at the idea of cremation. They had numerous different arguments against it. We'll discuss in more detail some of the specifics of the argument soon, but the poskim were all against it for one or a half dozen different reasons, some or all of a half dozen different reasons. Yet, it's interesting to note, as we've kind of been insinuating, that there is virtually no literature on the topic of cremation before the 19th century. In all the discussions, Tshuvos, the Shulchan Aruch, and in the laws of burial, there's virtually nothing on the topic, no real discussion about it until the 19th century, at which point we have an explosion of literature which is virtually unanimous in fierce opposition to cremation. It's certainly going on through the 20th century, and that's certainly the custom today. We know that today we consider it a fundamentally un-Jewish thing to cremate a body. It seems to me, and again, we'll see some of the literature, you can judge for yourself, but it seems to me that a lot of opposition of the 19th century was based on the idea that this was a non-Jewish burial practice, that this was a conscious attempt by the Jews to copy Christian practices, by the Reform, to make changes to Jewish tradition. I think a good analogy, it seems to me, is the analogy of mechitza, having a mechitza in shul. Today, starting from the mid-20th century, kind of, we know that one of the most core symbols of an Orthodox minyan, an Orthodox synagogue, is the mechitza. We know there were great battles fought against the conservative movement, against the Reform in the mid-20th century. As a matter of fact, one of the great modern compilations of tshuvas on mechitza came about in the context of a lawsuit. There was an old shul somewhere in the Midwest that was being taken over by younger and the new generation, and they were taking away its Orthodox character, and there was an old guard of faithful or traditional Orthodox Jews who were resisting it. And at one point, the case went to court. That they argued, the old guard argued, that mechitza was essential. It was a sine qua non of a traditional Jewish synagogue. The charter of the synagogue was that it was Orthodox and traditional. A mechitza was necessary, and they had to show in court, they had to prove that a mechitza was necessary. And again, there's virtually no literature on this before the 19th or 20th century. Nobody ever, there's a Gemara, but there's almost nothing in Shulchan Aruch. Everyone just took for granted that Jews have a mechitza, but there was nothing written about it. There was nothing, it wasn't a big deal. Until it became a flashpoint of machlokas between the Orthodox and the non-Orthodox in the 20th century. And then they collected a whole bunch of letters from contemporary American Rabbanim, Rav Soloveitchik, I think Rav Moshe, and many others, arguing that mechitza is essential for a Jewish synagogue. And I think a similar thing happened with cremation, and here it was a century earlier, back in the 19th century. Until the 19th century, there's no question we know that it was a Jewish tradition to bury people. We know, putting aside these discussions of embalming, we know through Apparatus it says Avram buried Sarah, and it says Avram was buried. The word kvura is mentioned all over the Torah, and we know that there's no question that in general Jews did burial. They did not do cremation. As a matter of fact, we have a quote from the Roman historian Tacitus, who notes this. He says that the Jews have their own traditions. He says a funeral tradition is a major difference. He says, unlike we Romans, we burn our dead, the Jews bury their dead. And they acknowledge that the traditional Jewish practice was burial, not cremation. They acknowledge that there were non-Jewish cultures that had cremation. But again, you won't find any real Gemara about this, any real discussion in the Shulchan Aruch. And until the 19th century, where there was an explosion of literature about this, and it seems to me that the reason is because of the problem of the Reform. The Reform were consciously chipping away at traditional Jewish practice, so the Rabbanim drew a line in the sand, and they said, this is not acceptable. They did have a number of technical reasons, as we'll discuss soon, but it seems to me that the primary motivation was to resist the Reform and to resist the desire to copy the non-Jews. Just to show how much creation was not really an issue before that, so we've discussed the Rashba and the Radvaz and the Shmos Yaakov, who all took for granted that this form of chemical cremation, not fire cremation, was okay, at least when done for a good reason. Now, there are differences, that that was chemical, not fire. And also, we pointed out that in those cases, the skeleton was being left intact over there. It was just the flesh that was being burned away, unlike modern cremation where everything is burned. But still, we find Poskim assumed that even real cremation would be included in the same, even created cremation by fire would be included in the same discussion. There is a discussion in Hilchos Shabbos. It talks about when there is a conflagration, a fire that bursts forth on Shabbos. There's a whole siman in Shulchan Aruch, the whole discussion in the Gemara about what you can do to save things. You can't really be Mechal Shabbos, but what can you do? If there's an Erev, take things out of the house, Mukta, other questions. All discussion of what you're allowed to do. Obviously, when people's lives are in danger, we do everything. We put out the fire, we do whatever we can. But you know, the post can often talk about cases where there is no danger to life or limb, just a danger to property. So what can you do? What can't you do? So there's a discussion about if there is a mace, if there is a human cadaver that hasn't been buried yet, are you allowed to take it out on Shabbos? Might be mukta, might be other reasons why you're not allowed to. So some of the poskim say no, and some of the poskim explain because even if a fire will destroy the body, that's not considered a bizayon. Bizayon a mace is a real problem. But you see from the Rashba, they say, you see from the poskim that burning a mace was not considered a bizayon. The Rashba says explicitly that burning a body, he was talking about chemical cremation, now we're talking about cremation by fire, but they assume machta shekel assumes it's the same thing. It is not considered a bizayon for the mace to burn the body. It's not disrespectful. It's a respectful way of disposing of a body or of allowing a body to be disposed. And therefore, he doesn't say it's mutter to do it l'chatchila, but he says that it's not considered bizayon a mace for a mace to be burned. There's also a tosfos they bring. Many achronim bring a tosfos. Tosfos says that it's in the context of a very technical discussion of the laws of tumah and tara, but in passing, in discussing that sugya, Tosfos says that burning a mace, burning a human body, he says, is not customary. The customary thing is to bury it, but Tosfos implies there's no actual issur. It's just that it wasn't the normal protocol for disposing of a body. Tosfos implies that there is no actual prohibition against burning a body. And there's a comment of the, even as late as the 19th century, where, as I mentioned, there was fierce opposition to cremation. We have a little passage in the Divrei Shaul Yosef Das of Yosef Shaul Matins in the Shaul Lameshiv. He says he was asked in 1874, Shnas Tafresh Lamed Dalad. He was asked by someone in München, from a certain rabbi in München, the German city of München, that he says that there was a discussion then about whether burning a mace was considered a bizayon. So he says, he brings a tosis, he says that it's clear, it seems from tosis that there was no real bizayon, but then he says that he has an argument that there is a bizayon, he brings other rayas from Shas that there is. He's not certain. He says there are arguments both ways as to whether burning a body is considered a disgrace, a disrespectful way of disposing of a body. According to strict technical halacha, it's not entirely clear. There are sources both ways, he says, and it's not absolutely clear that destroying a body, the disposing of a body via burning, is actually prohibited under the rules of Bizayon HaMeis. Now, the poskim, as I said, of the 19th century were unanimously opposed to cremation, and they give about a half dozen different reasons. Just briefly to summarize them, and we'll discuss some more of them in more depth. The first reason, the most kind of basic, technical, halachic reason, is that it is that you are mevatel, that you are not properly fulfilling the mitzvah of kura. The Torah says there's a mitzvah of kura. Kura is a mitzvah say deraisa and a los say of not burying. So there's a biblical commandment to bury the body. And as Rav Kook says, Rav Kook was vehemently opposed to cremation. Rav Kook has letters where he has passionate denunciation of the practice and a lengthy explanation of why it's so terrible. And Rav Kook says His analogy is, he says it's like any other, even though the Torah doesn't explicitly discuss cremation, he says it doesn't matter. He says like any other mitzvah, the Torah tells you how to do a mitzvah, tefillin or lulav. We know that that's a signature part of being Jewish, that Hashem doesn't just say do this and make up the details as ever you want. The Torah tells you exactly how to do it. We have everything we do. We have all kinds of formal halachas for exactly how you're supposed to do it and how you're not supposed to do it. And some of it is drasha, some of it is Torah Shebal Peh, but everything we do, every mitzvah that we do, matzah, the Torah tells you how to make matzah, and when the Gemara tells you what the rules are, everything is rules. So Rav Kook says, Kvura is no exception. It's true the Torah doesn't give you any detail for how to bury the body, but like anything else in halacha, the Torah has rules. Disposition of a body should be done by burial. Burial is done like this and not like that. And burial implies burial and not burning, and therefore, at the very least, Rav Kook and many other Achronim have said that cremating a body is a violation of the mitzvah to properly bury the body. Yeah, two psukim. One of them is ki kover sik barenu. It's all in the same pasuk of Baltalim. As he's pointing out, it comes in the context of the person who's executed by Beis Din. The Torah says, don't leave the body hanging indefinitely or even overnight. Lo salin. Instead, ki kover sik barenu, you shall bury him. So Chazal Darshan, we'll discuss the Gemara presently. Chazal Darshan, it's both the mitzvahs I say to bury as well as mitzvahs lo say not to leave it out there. So it's an asay and a loz asay to bury the body. Some poskim say, as we noted briefly in the show Lameshiv, it's a question of bizayon ameis, that cremation is considered a bizayon. Some worry about the tzar of the mace. And yeah, so that's right. That's the next one. Some argue that it's chukos hagayim, chikoy hagayim, that it's copying the non-Jews, b'chukoseim lo teilechu. Some argue, self-contradictory. Some argue, and even argue in the same breath, that it's just the opposite, that if we burn a mace, it'll be a chilul Hashem, because by the 19th century, they claim, at least in the European, Christian 19th century society, burying a mace was considered the religious way of doing things, and burning was considered pagan. You know, you have the Vikings with their funeral pyres, the Indians, you know, so some argued that the Adarabba, that not being like the guy, would be considered. It's amazing. You see, this is just my example. You see how far they were going to find reasons not to burn. That they use almost contradictory reasons. On the one hand, they say if we burn, we're copying the non-Jews. They say if we burn, we're not copying the non-Jews. It's a chilul Hashem. In the same breath, they say both those reasons. They point out the Gemara says that Titus, the general, the Roman general, he had according to the Gemara, he had a terrible life of villainy and infamy and disrespect and chutzpah toward HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He did the Churban, he defied HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when he died, he himself was worried that the God of the Jews would come after him. So in a final act of brazenness and defiance, this is the Gemara in Gittin about the Churban, we learn on Tisha B'Av sometimes, it says his orders to his instructions to his heirs were, burn my body and scatter my ashes across the world so that God, you won't be able to catch up with me. Of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can is smarter than that, and stronger than that, and more powerful than that. And Hashem did. He said, gather up all the ashes. His punishment was Hashem would gather every day. They would gather all his ashes. They would reconstitute him. They would burn him again and do the same thing to him ad infinitum. That was his punishment. But again, the poskim say, you see, that was what the Romans did. That's what the Rishayim did. So in the same breath, they say, on the one hand, don't do what the villainous goyim do. On the other hand, you should do what the, I guess, religious modern Christians do. You should, as a matter of fact, that you should do what they do to avoid making a chilul Hashem. So we'll just discuss some of these, reasons in a little more detail, and see how the poskim have handled all these reasons. I want to first discuss one last reason, which I've had a lot of trouble with theologically, I've grappled with for years about. One last reason the poskim give is that burial shows our belief in Tchiyas HaMeisim, and on the contrary, burning the body shows that we indicate that we don't believe in Tchiyas HaMeisim. Many of the modern 19th, 20th century tshuvas say that people who order that they be cremated are Rishayim and they're Apikorsim and they're showing they don't believe in Tchiyas HaMeisim and they're excluding themselves from the theological foundations of Judaism. I had a very hard time with this. I still have a very hard time with this. For many years, I struggled with this. What about all the Jews who were burned in the Holocaust? What about the Jews who were burned in the Ordo da Fe in Spain? Hashem has a problem bringing them back? Of course not. Hashem, it's harder for Hashem. Hashem will have to work a little harder, put an overtime to bring them back. Chas v'shalom. Hashem can do whatever he wants. We believe, emunah shleima, Hashem will bring back whoever he wants. Tchias HaMeisim is a nace from beginning to end, and if you put the body in the ground and it decomposes, it's not a nace for Hashem to bring it back. The body's not intact anyway. So what on earth is this argument? How does burning a body show any less belief in Tchias HaMeisim than marrying a body? Especially as we saw earlier, there were tzaddikim and chassidim who deliberately instructed that they be put sit on the body and destroy the body fast because I'll be kabbalah and I'll be medrashim. It's a kapara for the body to burn and to be decomposed as quickly as possible. We do put the body in the ground. We don't wrap the body in metal coffins. We want the body to be exposed to the earth and decompose. So why all of a sudden, when it comes to cremation, are we so worried theologically? What about Tchias HaMeisim, man? When the body is decomposed, it's not going to. There's a problem with Tchias HaMeisim. So I never understood this. Many poskim say it. I never understood it until recently. I found a discussion of this by Rav Kook. Rav Kook, as I mentioned earlier, has a fiery denunciation of the practice of cremation, and one of his arguments, which he discusses at length, is indeed the issue of belief in Tchias HaMeisim. And he acknowledges my question. He says, Lamaisi says, it doesn't make sense. You know, from a pure philosophical, theological standpoint, there's no difference whatsoever whether the body is decomposed in the ground or burned. He says, nevertheless, he says, Kvura is mukhzekes b'leiv kol Yisrael. It's something which is in the heart, is ingrained in the heart of every Jew, that it's associated with Tchias HaMeisim, which is an ikar b'Torah, etc., etc. The afal pi, he says, she'ein matzil f'nei Kodesh Baruch Hu, nothing stops the Kodesh Baruch Hu for a kol yachol to get everything back together, even if the ashes are scattered, and to revive the body. And he brings my examples of the Jews who were burned al Kiddush Hashem. V'chol kedoshim anisrafu be'esh vada yizku l'tchia. They're certainly going to be revived at Tchias HaMeisim. He says, nevertheless, he says the idea, he says, is a kind of modern psychological idea. He says, we do certain things, symbolic acts, and we make certain statements, even if upon a cold, purely philosophical examination, they don't really hold up. They don't really show anything more. It doesn't matter, he says. It's a statement to simple people. It's a statement in just a simple, superficial way. It's a statement that we believe in Tchias HaMeisim, even if theologically upon it doesn't really hold up to careful scrutiny. He says, anything we do, even al pi minhag Yisrael, he says, l'chazik es ha'emunah, even just l'karev es ha'tzir el ha'lev, to just make it a little more tangible, a little more visceral, to just feel it a little more. Even that is something that's an important value. He says Lenin Tchias HaMeisim, the tzir of kvura is yoser karav elachush. It's easier for the human mind somehow, even just intuitively, to kind of accept and grasp that the bodies are going to be returned. He brings the example, Chazal compared it to a grain of wheat. You take the wheat, you bury it in the ground, and then it sprouts and it grows. And Chazal said that was a kind of metaphor, a symbol of Tchias HaMeisim. So burning is different. Burying is one thing, burning is different, he says. He says the idea is that we want to preserve the tzura, the visual and vivid picture of Kvura, he says. Anything which tampers with that is wrong. Even though it's only in the minds of simple people and the masses, he says, people look at burning as being somehow more destructive and more permanent. So that's Rav Kook's idea. That even though you're right, upon a pure, cold, abstract theological investigation, doesn't really hold up. It still has symbolic value. I don't, you know, still not fully satisfied with that, but at least he's addressing my question. But in any event, that was one of the reasons many poskim said, the Beis Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak Shmelkis, goes with this reason. Many later Akronim go with this. Rav Zev Wolf Leiter in the Tshuva also says this. And this is an idea that many poskim said, that it's a question of belief in Tchias HaMeisim. And that's part of the reason why the poskim were, I think, so vigorously opposed to it, because even though the other reasons we're going to discuss, the mitzvah of Kura, are also mitzvahs, okay, but you know, people who are not religious, a lot of mitzvahs they don't do. And somehow Kvura became an especially emotional part of the reason, I think, as I said before, because it was a kind of deliberate sign of reform and Christianization. But part of it, I think, also is because there was this belief that it was a rejection of the belief in Tchias HaMeisim. So we'll spend a few minutes discussing the basic mitzvah of Kvura and the losasei of Baltalan. So there's a this will also indicate how ambiguous it is from the Gemara that you really have to the basic question of do we want to do things which preserve the mace or which hasten its decomposition? Do we want to cause the mace honor or do we want to hasten its kind of disintegration? So the Gemara in Sanhedrin has the central sugya about kvura. The Gemara says Shvar Malka, king named Shvar Malka, which usually assumed, at least in this context, was a Gentile, a non-Jewish person. He asked the sages of the Talmud, he said, Kvura Minatara Minayin. How do you Jews know that there is a mitzvah of Kvura? So we said before, the Rapsukim, Kavar Sikmaranu, Lo Talin. But it says that the person he asked didn't know the answer. The Gemara says, that's silly, of course you know the answer. The answer should be, it says, Kikavar Sikmaranu. The Gemara says, no, cover could mean that put him in a box, but don't put the box on the ground, like a mausoleum, like we have today. Ramosha has several tshuvas, Ramosha Feinstein has several tshuvas about mausoleums, where he argues that it's against halacha, but again, if you're a person who doesn't have Torah Shebal Peh, if you're a non-Jew and you just want to read the biblical text, it's not mulchach, maybe that's what cover means. What about the word tikbarenu? It says a second drasha. It says, no, the non-Jews, again, they don't accept these drashas from the double word. They don't accept that unless you can show them that it's a clear, unambiguous implication of the Bible. They're not going to accept it. So do we have any clear, unambiguous expression of the Bible? So the Gemara goes on. The Gemara says, well, what about the fact that the tzaddikim were buried? Rashi says it means Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov, we discussed before. There's no question the biblical record is that they buried the great righteous men of the Bible. So the Gemara says, no, again, in a very kind of modern, sophisticated approach, the Gemara says, no, minig ba'al mehu shenagu, it's only a minig. Rashi explains it was just a minig. That's what they used to do, so that's what they did. It doesn't tell you that it's a halachic, authentic, and necessary Jewish value. It just says that was what the tradition was back then, so that's what they did. Not everything in the Bible has to be a genuine Jewish mitzvah. It could just be that's what they did back then. You know, they had sheep. Having sheep might not be a Jewish value. That's how people live. That's how society worked. It doesn't tell you that this is an essential Jewish value. What about Moshe Rabbeinu? It says God buried Moshe Rabbeinu. It says, again, it could also be that was the custom back then. People were buried, so Hashem did that honor for Moshe and buried him. But it doesn't tell you that it's an immutable, essential Jewish value.
God went along with the society, right?
That's the suggestion, right. So the Gemara goes on, the Gemara goes back and forth. At one point, the Gemara proposes two reasons for Kvura. The Gemara says one reason is Mishum Bizyona, and the other reason is Mishum Kapar. The first reason is to avoid humiliation, to avoid degrading the mace. And the second reason is for kapara. What do these mean? So Rashi says bizayon means because seeing the body just sitting there and just decomposing is a disgrace for the human body. And the other reason is kapara, and it's almost just the opposite. Kapara again means that we almost want to disgrace the mace. We want to take the body and put it down and throw it in the ground and lower it. It doesn't say bizayon, but it's almost the opposite. It's not meant to honor the mace. It's meant kind of to give him a kapara by sticking him in the ground and showing that you need a kapara. It's not clear how you paskin either necessarily. The Rambam does paskin. The Rambam says that the Gemara says that an afkamina of these two reasons is if the mace says, I don't want it. I don't want burial. So if the reason is bizayon, then it doesn't matter because bizayon is not just for the person himself. Bizayon is for the human race as a whole, for the family, for the other members of the human race, and the kapara is for the person himself. He can turn it down. Lahalacha we paskin, he cannot turn it down. We don't listen to him if he turns it down. And lahalacha we have to bury him. And the Rambam, when he brings down the halacha that's the mitzvah to bury, Rambam doesn't even bring down these reasons. The Rambam just says that if a person turns down kura, we ignore him because it is a mitzvah and a person you have to do mitzvahs. Some Achronim explain, Rav Cook and others explain, that we as Jews in general, we have a principle, lo darshina and tamad dekra. When Hashem tells us a mitzvah, we don't start giving reasons. So it's true, the Sfarim do give reasons, but the Poskim explain, the reasons are just kind of an hashkafa for our own edification. We don't affect the halacha. We don't derive halacha from the reasons that we propose for mitzvah. We don't have enough confidence in our reasons, or whatever the issue is. As a matter of halacha, we take the Torah's mitzvahs at face value. We don't start analyzing them and characterizing them based on the reasons. Some learn. That's what the Rambam held too. The Rambam held that this whole Gemara giving reasons for Kfura and implying that there are halachic ramifications to the reasons. That's not the approach we take. La halacha, we follow the approach that the Torah tells us, cover sikbrenu, for the non-Jews, that's not enough, because they don't accept the drasha, they don't accept Torah Shebal Peh. But for we Jews, we do accept Torah Shebal Peh. We accept the understanding of the Torah as the rabbinic tradition says, and therefore, as far as we're concerned, no questions asked. Kfura is a mitzvah. And therefore, many later Akharim said, Nachi Ezer and many others have said, that that's why cremation is prohibited, because cremation would be considered a violation of the mitzvah. Even if you want to bury the ashes after cremation, that's not a kiyum of the mitzvah. That is your mevatel mitzvah by burning it, the ashes of something else. And so that's what they argue, that by burning the mace, you are violating the mitzvah of kfura. Now, there's a whole separate question, which many poskim discuss, going down to the 20th century, a very practical question, which is, assuming someone doesn't listen to us and gets cremated, or assuming he was just burned like in the Holocaust or something where he had no choice in the matter, what should we do with the ashes? Should we bury the ashes in a Jewish cemetery or not? This was a question of fierce debate among the poskim. So again, here, there are really two dimensions to the question. There's one question, kind of the more abstract and less emotionally charged question, which is, putting aside any question of avera, let's say the people who were buried in the Holocaust, there's nothing wrong, or they were chas v'shalom killed in a fire. Is there a mitzvah of kura on those ashes? The poskim debate. Some poskim have said that no, there's no mitzvah of kura on the ashes. Like we said, that's why burning is a bitul mitzvah of kura. Therefore, you don't really have to bury it in the cemetery. Others have argued, no, there is a mitzvah. There is a mitzvah to bury the ashes. In a case where a person himself instructed that he should be cremated, against the vehement opposition of the poskim, there many poskim have argued you should dafka not bury the ashes. We should show that the person is a rasha and the person is rejecting Jewish funerary rituals and. And we have to make an example of this. We have to give a deterrent against doing this. So there, many poskim have insisted that we dafka not bury him because, or bury far away in a different portion of the cemetery or a different. I don't know what the custom is today, but as recently as Moshe Feinstein, for example, he said that there is no mitzvah to bury ashes. It's a very brief line. Whether it's someone who has to be cremated, even someone who was just. Unfortunately burned in a fire, there's no mitzvah to bury the ashes, and there's no mitzvah kura on ashes, and you can pretty much do whatever you want with them. So that was one issue the poskim discussed, the question of the bittul of the mitzvah of kura. We discussed the other reason of nivala meis, of kavana meis, of tzar of the meis. The Rashba says there's no tzar, even bizayon, the Rashba seems to imply there's no bizayon, at least when you're doing it in a matter of honor. Other poskim disagree, the Shaul HaMeishiv and others disagree. That's another issue that was debated. Again, one has the impression that the primary reason is either the bittul mitzvah kura or the copying of the non-Jews. I want to discuss a little bit, as you mentioned before, I want to discuss for a few minutes, though, the other idea of copying the customs of the non-Jews. This is something that Poskim did bring up. Rav Zev Wolf Leiter in his Beis David and others brought the issue of Meir Arik, of copying the customs of the non-Jews. And the truth is, you can really push back against this argument. Again, this is not a compelling argument, because the halacha generally is, as we've discussed previously, as many posts have discussed in many different contexts, the consensus view is that there is no isser of copying the non-Jews if it's not a pagan practice, it's not a practice that's un-Jewish, it's not a practice that has pritus or is immodest or is somehow un-Jewish in character. If it's a sensible, non-superstitious, rational, understandable practice, there is in general no prohibition. The mainstream opinion of halacha is there is in general no prohibition of copying the non-Jews. For example, we all dress in Western dress. We wear, you know, whatever the styles are. There were those who were opposed to that, but our practice obviously is that we feel there's nothing superstitious or essentially pagan about wearing pants and a suit and a tie. That's just the way society developed to dress, and we do the same thing. So Rav Avadia Yosef, for example, has two tshuvas specifically about funeral practice, not discussing cremation. He has two tshuvas back-to-back about different types of non-Jewish funerary practice. The first one was about putting flowers, a wreath, on top of a coffin. The second one was about wearing black mourning, black armbands, black ribbons and hats, and stuff like that. In both these cases, he has long tshuvas where he deals he deals with the essential question of, is this is clearly a non-Jewish, Western European, whatever it is, practice of mourning. Is there a problem with a Jew adopting non-Jewish funerary practices? And in both tshuvos, he answers after lengthy and characteristically erudite discussions, no, there is not. His argument has a few parts. He does argue that there were actually Jewish precedents for these things too. But beyond that, he basically argues, his main argument is, anything which is simply derech kavod, which is simply a societally developed means of honoring somebody, the fact that different cultures develop different ways of showing honor, that's not a problem. The fact that this is not our traditional funerary practice, it's not, we don't use flowers, we don't use black armbands, it doesn't matter, he says. There's nothing pagan or superstitious or immodest about wearing black mourning. And he actually argues that there were sources in Chazal that wearing black was a symbol of mourning. But flowers also, he says, there's nothing un-Jewish about flowers. There's nothing un-Jewish or immodest or pagan about flowers. Flowers are a perfectly sensible, it's a natural human desire to show respect by putting nice flowers on a coffin. Therefore, he says, the prohibition of chukas hagayim does not apply to such practices. He even brings, in the course of one of the tshuvas, a whole slew of literature where the poskim in the 19th century began to discuss the use of hearses. Back then, the hearses were drawn by horses, they weren't cars like today. But they were specially designed carriages with special horses, and they were dressed in black, and so on. He brings a number of 19th century achronim, including some pretty traditional sources, Chaim Sofer and others, who he points out. Chaim Sofer was the great battler against the Reform, the great one who said Chadash Asim Min HaTorah, who had zero tolerance for modern innovation. Nevertheless, the Chaim Sofer didn't feel that Jews traditionally did not use hearses. Jews traditionally had manual pallbearers who would carry the coffin to the, like we do at least, even today we do use a hearse, but for the last, to carry it actually to the grave, we often use humans. So the poskim said in the 19th century, there's nothing pagan or superstitious or immodest or un-Jewish about a hearse. It's simply A, for convenience, because it's hard for to manually carry the mace all the way to the grave, and B, it's a sign of respect, having the black horses and the black cloths and everything, it's all a sign of respect. And the consensus of the poskim is that there's no problem with that. He does acknowledge that Rav Shlomo Kluger, one of the leading 19th century authorities, did have a passionate denunciation of hearses on the grounds of chukas hagayim. However, he says, as I said earlier about the general question of cremation to begin with, he says that Ha'emes Yaradarko, he says, that Rav Shlomo Kluger was primarily opposed to what he felt was a reform encroachment on traditional Judaism. He felt it was a conscious attempt to ape the Christians, and that's wrong, he says. Again, he wasn't talking about cremation, he was talking about pallbearers versus hearses. Rav Avadia says, discussing his question of the hearses and the flowers and the armbands, he says, Avadia, if a person is not doing it because he desires to copy the Christian, because he desires to reform Judaism, he's doing it simply because it's a sensible thing that he feels is a nice way of showing respect and dignity for the mace, that is fine. Now, Rav Avadia does say, in the end of both his tshuvas, that ideally, if a person is in a position to listen to the Rabbanim, we should tell him that it's not really our tradition, and we don't really do these things, and certainly in Eretz Yisrael, where we're developing our own culture and our own customs, and we're not beholden to European customs, we should, he said, gently try to explain to the mourners that we have our own traditions, and these are not among them. However, he says, Rav Avadia is very understanding, he said, people are often not in a good frame of mind to listen, they're distraught, if they can't listen, he said, if they can't accept it, it's not worth making a fight about, it's not osir, al pi halacha, it's mutter, and therefore just do it. So even though, again, all these posts were not talking about cremation, they were talking about things like black mourning and hearses and flowers, nevertheless, certainly one could make a similar argument with regard to cremation. If a person's doing it because he thinks the Christians are so wonderful, that's a problem. If a person just feels that it shows more honor for the mace, or it's cheaper, or for whatever the reasons are, if a person's doing it because he has sensible reasons which aren't directly opposed to Jewish tradition, I think for this particular, again, there might be other reasons to prohibit it. There might be the reasons of the technical mitzvah of Kura and so on. But this particular reason, I think one could easily argue that is not compelling because of the mainstream idea that chukas hagayim does not apply when you're doing it for sensible and rational reasons and not to copy the non-Jews. As a matter of fact, the same passage in Rav Yosef Shaul Nathanson, the Shaul Amation I quoted before, who ends by saying that he's not even clear whether cremation is a bizarre mace or not, he opens the tshuva by discussing other types of funeral practices. They used to have a custom that they would burn the accoutrements, the accessories of the mace. Sarfan al-Malachan, they used to burn the property of the mace. And Rav Nathan discusses whether there's a problem of chukas hagoyim by doing that. And again, he's inclined to argue that no, there is not. He adopts strongly this standard, which, as I've said, is the mainstream standard in halacha, that anything done for a sensible and rational purpose is fine. And furthermore, he argues the same extension I made before, that when you discuss kavod, he says, when you discuss showing honor for something, honor is inherently not subject to an irrational demonstration. The honor is, by its nature, is culturally dependent. It has to do with how a given society, how a given culture shows honor. So if your culture shows honor by, you know, burning some property, by burning the mace clothing or whatever it is to show that he's irreplaceable and we respect him and we're so sad and that we're distraught by his loss. So Rav Nathanson argues again that there is no issue of chukas hagoyim by adopting practices that are meant for the honor of the mace, in spite of the fact that those happen to be the same things that the non-Jews do. That's not necessarily a problem if you aren't consciously attempting to emulate the non-Jews. We mentioned the notion briefly of Chilul Hashem, the opposite idea that by doing things that the non-Jews do, that by doing things that they see as a Chilul Hashem, that's a problem. And the truth is, this is an idea that also has some sources in Judaism. The most famous paradigm for this, the most famous precedent, is a ruling in the Magen Avraham. Magen Avraham comes up in Hilchos Shabbos. The halacha is Amira La'akum is prohibited on Shabbos. Normally, we can't just instruct a non-Jew to do malacha for us. However, there are certain cases where it's mutter, complicated sugyas, if he's doing it as a contractor, if he's doing it on his own schedule, for his own benefit. There are certain cases where it's mutter. We're not going to get into the details. Nevertheless, the Magen Avraham said he was talking about a certain arrangement of construction, where there are certain ways of building construction which might be mutter. Says the Magen Avraham, the way he's explained by the acronym, not so clear, but what he seems to mean is, in a culture, in a society, where the non-Jews, on their holiday, Sunday, will not do work, even via a Jewish contractor, they see that as being a desecration of their Sabbath, we can't use them to work for us on our Shabbos. Because if they see this as Chil Shabbos for them, Chil Sabbath, Chil Sunday, we can't do the same thing because they would see us, it would be a Chil Hashem, because they would see us as being hypocrites or as being insincere in our commitment to Torah. So many Acharim have used this as a paradigm for the idea, even something which according to Halacha is absolutely mutter, if the non-Jews won't understand this, and the non-Jews will say that you don't keep your own laws, that's a problem. So one place this comes up, Rav Leiter mentions this in the context of his funerals, one place this comes up is smoking on fast days, Tisha B'Av, for example. There was a great debate going back several hundred years whether it's permitted to smoke pipes, cigars, whatever you want, on a fast day. So most of the discussion is technical. Is that a violation of either the prohibition of eating and drinking or on Tisha B'Av of the greater idea of Inui? Is there any problem of any violation of Inui on Yom Kippur? It's not relevant because you can't smoke on Yom Kippur because it's a malacha. But on Tisha B'Av, where there's no Isra malacha, is there any prohibition against smoking? And the poskim went back and forth on this. But one argument that came up in the Sefer Darchei Noam was it would be a Chil Hashem to smoke on a fast day. He says because the non-Jews, they see smoking as a violation of their rules of fasting. So even if we're going to halacha, we don't see it that way. It doesn't matter. He says that would be a Chil Hashem. If they see us as not being sufficiently pious, sufficiently committed and devoted to what they consider the model of fasting, that would be a Chil Hashem. Therefore, Rav Leiter says that the same thing applies in the context of cremation. If we would cremate a body, and the non-Jews would say that we Jews are not being respectful enough to the dead, even though we have a value, we claim to have a value of nivul ha-meis, but in practice we're willing to cremate bodies, and the non-Jews, the modern Christian 19th century non-Jews would see that as hypocrisy, would see that as a failure of piety. That itself is a Chilul Hashem. Now again, exactly how that is consistent with the idea that copying the non-Jews, dafka, that is an Isser of Chukas HaGoyim, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't at this point, I don't know. This comes up in other areas of Halacha too, where we find this tension between, on the one hand, we dafka don't do what they do, we have our own standards of morality, on the other hand, we dafka don't want to do things that would be a Chilul Hashem. This is a difficult topic, but in any event, Sof Dover HaKol Nishma, the poskim were, for whatever reason, vehemently opposed to the cremation. Maybe the primary reason was because of the Bitul Mitzvah of Tura, or because of the Christianization. But the bottom line is, that the post can all agree that cremation is un-Jewish and strictly prohibited.